Yeah, interesting topic for this morning in a better series. We've been looking at just times in the Bible where God says, this is what's better than this, this is better than that. And some of the passages we looked at so far was from the Psalms where he says, it's better to live one day in the courts of my God than 1,000 elsewhere. I'd rather be a gatekeeper for my Lord than to live in the tents of the wicked. And then the next week we looked at better is one handful with peace than two handfuls of never-ending stress. Can I get an amen on that one? It's a hard one to forget sometimes. Last week we looked at it as better to have wisdom than gold, better have insight than silver. So everywhere so far in this series, when we think about the word better, right, we're usually looking at things that, like, what would make my life easier? What would, I mean, let's face it, a stress-free life, much easier life, more enjoyable life, a life with wisdom. It's a whole lot better to know the right way than to learn the hard way, right? It's basically the better of everything so far is what makes life better or easier or more comfortable. Now, when we get to Ecclesiastes 7, Solomon's going to flip this. Because he's not going to be talking about how a better job gets you more money or a better vacation makes you enjoy things more. Rather, he says this, Ecclesiastes 7, verse 1, a good name is better than an expensive ointment, and the day of death is better than the day of the birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of feasting, for death is the destiny of everyone. The living should take this to heart, for frustration is better than laughter. Because a sad face is good for the heart. The heart of the wise is in the house of the mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. So he rattles off several better lines in there, but they all kind of have this one theme. He says, better is death than birth, better is a funeral than a house of feasting, better is sorrow than laughter, which you kind of look at Solomon and go, really, man? Really? You really think you'd rather go to a funeral than to a party? I don't think so. I'm thinking I'll take party any day of the week. Like, what's more fun, baby shower or funeral? All women answered that question. Sorry. neither here nor there. No, but we don't usually think of mourning or death or grief as being better. That's never on the good side of the better equation, right? Anything is better than that. That's like the one thing that, you know, no matter what you put next to it, whatever you put next to it's typically going to be better. But Solomon says, no, that's actually the better side of things. Why? His definition isn't necessarily about what feels good or what you're going to enjoy, but rather what is best for you. Is what he's getting at. What is the best thing for you and for your soul and for your life overall? What really brings out or leads to a better result, if you will? Not what is a better experience as far as in the moment, but what is the long-term thing? And we talked, you know, I think when one of the earlier messages, we talked about how, you know, never trade what you need or want most for what you want in the moment. This is an application of that. What I want in the moment is to not feel the hurt or the pain or the sorrow or the grief. That's what I want in the moment. But what I want most is the very thing that comes out of the experience of grief and sorrow and mourning and loss. That's what he's going to be getting into in this. And in light of all of the current events that have been going on, close to home, many of us in this room have lost somebody very close to us. Abroad, some of you lost a political, I don't know, he's a commentator, social, I could recognize his name and recognize the face, but I didn't know anything about him other than that until this week. And then you back up before that, I mean, it's almost like there's too much death going on to even keep up with it all right now. Is that a fair statement? I mean, a woman getting stabbed on a train, students getting shot in school. I mean, it's almost like as if they can't fully cover one story before the next thing happens. And Solomon says, don't keep scrolling. Sit for a minute. just sit there and reflect and process the moment. It's very easy just to kind of keep on scrolling by, whether it be scrolling by posts that friends are putting out there about experiences they had with a close friend, or just other things in the news as they come up. And I mentioned a couple weeks ago kind of Solomon's perspective. Solomon is somebody who literally got to do and experience everything you could possibly do or experience in life. He had more money, more power, more influence, more opportunity than any of us ever will. And we always focus on the good stuff that comes with all of that, right? But I would also argue that he also had the scars and the regrets and the clarity that comes from going down all those paths. Like, he had 1,000 women. I think he'd married either 700 or 300. I can't remember which. You don't think he regretted at least some of those marriages? Some of you are like, I've had quite fewer than that, and I know I have. I just... And he looks back, and this thing he keeps on saying about life is, it's all vanity. It is all as meaningful and as lasting as a puff that comes out of vaping. And at the risk of offending anyone else, I won't have anybody vape this morning on stage. Sorry if the illustration keeps coming up in Scripture. I know it's not probably great for your lungs, but we don't really know yet, so do with that what you will. I'm not advocating it. I'm just talking about what the illustrations the Bible uses. But that's what he says. Vanity, vanity, it's a mist. It's all like a vape cloud. And if you've seen those vape clouds, they're beautiful. And they smell amazing. But the beauty and the smell doesn't last very long. And he says, that's the best image I can give you of life and all that I've experienced and all that I've done. And he has done everything and experienced everything anybody could ever want to do or experience. And he looks back and he says this, he's kind of breaking down, he says, a good name is better than an expensive ointment, and the day of death is better than the day of birth. That statement, like, death is better than birth, sounds like Wednesday Addams, not God. Right? It's a girl from Addams Family, right? It sounds like something she would say, like, you know, hey, aren't you excited? We're going to a baby shower. I'd rather go to a funeral. I mean, you could just, like, picture, like, her and her monotone, you know, saying something like that. And then some little blonde girl with the pigtails comes up and goes, well, you're always dressed for one, right? Anyway, sorry. My mind goes in these places. Back to here. All right. But what he's getting at here is he's saying, listen, think about if you were to compare and contrast the events surrounding and the experience of a baby shower versus the events surrounding and the experience of a celebration of life service, right? So a baby shower is basically ignorant joy. This isn't me talking, this is Solomon, okay? I'm just expressing his thought, right? Like, what are we happy about? Because it's a baby. Yeah. What are we happy about? I know what we're happy about. We're happy about the fact that I'm not the one that's going to have to change the diapers or pay for braces, right? So here, I'll buy you a pack. You put them on. And here's a onesie also, right? That's a baby shower, right? We're all excited. We have no idea if this kid's going to grow up to do anything or not. It's funny. We love the baby shower, but then, like, we think of, like, terrible twos, having to watch an 8-year-old, deal with a teenager, deal with the heartache and the hassles of a 20-year-old who won't move out. Solomon's like, what were we so happy about, right? But now compare and contrast that now to a celebration of life service. And you're just remembering and laughing about the good times that you had and the things you experienced and what they said and the life and the meaning that came out of it. Says, you know, for a life lived well, there's a lot more intelligent joy that comes out of a celebration of life. I mean, you know what you're celebrating. In a sense, there's a pain there, but the pain is mainly because you're no longer able to experience the fun and the joy that you got to experience with that person, right? versus the, baby. Okay. I know it's Solomon's a guy, okay? Just keep ride with him on that, okay? It's a guy's perspective. But he's just coming back and he's saying there's a lot more that you, it's a much more meaningful experience than a baby shower. At the very least, can we agree on that? It's a much more meaningful experience. And this is where this illustration of some of your translations might say a perfume, some might say oil, some might say an expensive ointment. And he's saying that's why a good name is better than the ointment. And basically, think if you're in a dry, arid culture where it's hot all the time, ointments were very expensive, and so they were used, you know, rarely and on special occasions and for those who may have the means to afford it. The oils, though, think of like lotions, moisturizers, you know, it keeps your skin nice and soft in a dry climate. The perfumes, if bathing is not a frequent activity, which for them it wasn't, it's kind of nice when, you know, somebody sprays some Axe from time to time, right? Just kind of cover up the stink a little bit. Now, how long does it last, though? Like, yeah, it makes the skin look good for a little while, and it makes it not smell very bad for a little while, but compare that to the lasting impact of your reputation or the legacy you leave behind or how you're thought of. That's what's going to last a lot longer. Like, it's hard to remember what somebody smelled like on any given day, but who they were and the impact they had on your life doesn't leave you very quickly. It lasts a whole lot longer, and he's sort of like comparing, if you will, sort of the looks or the appearance with the legacy. And let's face it, if you live a long life, by the time you die, nobody will remember you ever even looked good at any point in your life, right? They always show those pictures, like, right? And you're like, oh, wow, she was a real babe back in the 60s, right? You ever had that, right? Like, oh, she was a looker, man. Good job, Grandpa. You really did good when you found Grandma. How'd you land that? Wow. You know? The reality, though, is time is going to do numbers on our waistline, our hairline, right, our skin. Eventually, all of us go the way of just not caring about fashion anymore. It's all about comfort and convenience at some point, right? That's why we don't even care about the way we look at some point. That's why he's saying, you know, we make a lot about first impressions, but the reality is it's the lasting impression that really matters. It's what they really did. It's not what you thought about them the first time you saw them. It's about what you're left with after they're gone. And so he says, what will they remember about you? Will they remember who you were and how you lived and the things that you gave your life to and how you helped others? Which is why he then goes on to say it's better to go to a funeral than to a party. And a little bit later on, next verse, he'll end up saying, the heart of the wise is in the house of the mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of pleasure. You see, it's unlikely to think about the kind of life you're living and the legacy you're leaving when you're at a party. If you go to baby shower, nobody contemplates, what am I doing with my life? Unless you're just jealous that you're not the one having the baby, right? You don't go to a baby shower and think, am I the kind of person I want to be? Am I living the kind of life I want to live? Am I doing the things? Am I leaving the kind of life? You don't think about that at a baby shower. But it's hard to not think about those questions when you go to a funeral. Looking around to see who's there and wondering who's going to be at my funeral. Listening to the things that they're saying at the funeral and wondering, what are they going to say about me? The reality is none of us really want to be thinking about death, but Solomon is saying it's good to. For me, in the past 4 or 5 years, I've lost several pastors that I have learned a lot from and have shaped my life profoundly and my ministry and how I view God. Charles Stanley, Tim Keller, R.C. Sproul, and just more recently in the past couple weeks, John MacArthur. I have listened to these men preach hundreds of hours of sermons, and I listen to them on a weekly basis. If you ever see me, I've got my AirPods in 24/7. I have three I have three sets of AirPod Pros because I will use them until the battery runs out and use it till the battery runs out. And I just keep, I cycle them all day long. And so as I listen to them now, it's just, it's hard, you know, realizing these people who have mentored me are gone. I'm so glad that they left so much for me to gain from. But nobody leaves a funeral and thinks to themselves, I really need to get a new car. Right? It's the furthest thing from your mind, right? You don't think about that kind of thing. Rather, you just think those other things. I mean, some of you may have been profoundly shook when Charlie Kirk was killed, either because of having seen it the way that you did, or maybe something he said resonated with you. And he said, you know, a lot of things about, I understand the nuance, I'll say that. If you don't understand the nuance, you need to listen to everything. I've gone back and listened to the whole kind of scope. He said a lot of things about God and Jesus. He had his political view. He also said a lot of things about Dr. King. Just listen to all of it. There's some good and there's some bad. He was a provocateur. And what he said about Jesus was provocative, and what he said about race was also, I'll politely say, provocative. Is that a fair statement? But there is a collective question that I think everybody has asked this past week is, would I be willing to die for what I believed? What is it that you believe? Do you believe it strong enough and profound enough and bold enough that even if it cost your life to stand on the rooftop for what you believe, I don't care what you believe. I don't. I don't care what I said. I'm asking about you. This is the question that you should be walking away with, is what you believe and the principles you stand for. Would you be so bold enough that everybody at your funeral would know 100% who you are and what you stood for? Maybe for you, you have some very strong feelings about Jesus Christ, but does anybody in your life know it? Maybe you have some strong feelings about equality and how we should treat other people. Does everybody around you know it? Or is this just something you believe in the privacy of your own home and you don't want anybody to know what you really feel about these things? At the very least, you can look at this and ask this question of yourself, would I be willing to die for what I truly believe? And you think about the school children or the woman on the train. None of those parents who sent their kids to school that day and that woman who just got off work had any clue whatsoever that this was the last time that would happen. And the takeaway from this is, you know, what am I doing with my life? If today is my last, and it very well could be. And this is the hard part. I've been trying to contemplate some of the reactions I'm seeing. I think it's because we live in such a civilized era. And by civilized, I mean civilized in the sense of as being opposite from a brutalized society or a barbaric society. And let's face it, up until the modern century, life was very barbaric. People died in the house. People rarely die in a house. One of the stats I saw was 80% of what's spent on healthcare in the United States is spent on the last 2 weeks of someone's life. Why? Because we've taken death and we've sanitized it. And oftentimes, the medical staff says, we need you to leave because they're about to die. They don't say it that way, but isn't that basically what they're saying? Or we need you to leave until we can put enough stuff in this person that we can artificially keep them alive so you can see them before they actually have the kind of death that people would have experienced in days gone by. The only reference most of us have to death, especially if you are ages 30 and younger, is from the video game deaths that you've seen and what you've seen on movies. And so when you see somebody, and they've, you know, got footage out there of somebody literally dying right before your eyes, your reference point is to somebody who just gets to respawn as the game starts over. And it's hard to comprehend that this is actually real death. And that's why I think you've seen people kind of go, oh, this is, I don't know what to do with this. It's a confusing emotion because it all of a sudden hits you that life is not a video game. And Solomon's saying, yes, that's a good thing. It's a good thing for a civilized world who has so removed themselves from death, they can't even contemplate their own mortality, because this life is best lived with eternity in mind. It's why I keep this rope over here. It's that important. It'd be nice if it stuck into something stronger on the wall. But if you haven't seen this before, this is an illustration that eternity gets all up in knots sometimes too. It's a simple picture of this. If this whole rope represented your entire existence, all of this, this would be your birth. A little bit of tape right here. I switched to another color and say this would be kind of your life and your career. What you know, all of your education back here in this early part is all about doing whatever, becoming whatever, or accomplishing whatever. And then eventually you get to your retirement years, your golden years, where you use everything you've saved up for. And this is what you know of as life. And God's trying to say, this is this. This is your life. What are you living for? This life is about nothing more. See? This life is about nothing more than in this short period of time you have to grow, develop, and establish a loving relationship with the one who made you and created you and saved you, such that you'll be able to enjoy it for all eternity. That's what this life is all about. And we forget about that because we get so focused about this, and if I don't do what's right here, then this is going to get messed up, and if this gets messed up, then this is going to be difficult, and this is going to be difficult, and then I'm never going to be able to enjoy this piece over here, and oh, my life is over. And a funeral is where somebody has gotten out of this whole thing, and you recognize they've stepped into this. And there's a lot more of this than this, and so you begin to ask these questions, what am I living for? What am I doing? Alarm bells go off in your head at some point. When I first went into comedy, they asked me, how are you going to handle hecklers? It's like, I've dealt with babies in church, phones in church, old people whose watch tell them the time. That's fun. It is 12 o'clock. That was my first church. When you have a church that starts at 11, and some lady's watch is going to go off at 12, and it would always hit right as I'm trying to pray to close out the message. Anyway, sorry. And I've been heckled at a funeral, too. That was fun. Anyways, where are we at now? So he says, sorrow is better than laughter, and sadness is better because it has a refining influence on us. How do you preach a message like this in a culture whose mantra, whose founding documents are all about the pursuit of happiness? The last thing on earth anybody in our society wants to do is deal with pain. Face pain, experience pain. Isn't that the definition of civilization, right? To remove us as far as possible from pain? Play it out. Think about it. People die in wars every day. Not in my yard. Not in my backyard. It wasn't until I moved to Virginia Beach that I even knew a soldier that ever died. This is a very unique community for that. Go anywhere else in America and you talk about soldiers, it's over there. In the civilized world, we don't think about that kind of barbarity. We've got all kinds of vices that we turn to for escaping or numbing or distracting us from pain. And these are the vices, I would dare say, vex our soul and cause a lot of other side problems and side effects, right? We use relationships, sex, porn, to not think about it. alcohol, prescription drugs, over-the-counter drugs, weed, stuff you can get from a dealer, just to numb the pain, not make us think about it anymore. Others of you look down on that kind of thing, but you're all about retail therapy, right? You just want to get away to some exotic place. Maybe even get out of the service. Some of you just want to remodel the house, get you a project to focus on, change everything, just so you can distract yourself and not have to think about anything, anything to stay busy. Others, you go the complete opposite route, and all you want to do is shut down and isolate. And if you could just Rip Van Winkle your way through this, you'd be happy. Like if you, the reference, if you could just sleep and wake up and it'll all be over. I forget that some people don't have the full references of a 50-year-old. If you could just sleep and wake up and it'll all be gone, that would be ideal. We want to do everything we can to not face the pain. And so Solomon says, no, don't avoid it. If I've learned anything in my life, he's an old man now and he's looking back over life, if I've learned anything in this life, is don't avoid it. You have to go through it. It is painful. I don't know for you, I know for me, the most profoundly shaping experiences I've been through have been associated with death and loss. C.S. Lewis once said this after the passing of his wife. I remember reading this as I was going through a period of grief. He says, pain insists upon being listened to. It insists on being listened to. You can't avoid it. And he says, God whispers in our pleasures. He speaks in our conscience, but he shouts in our pains. It is a megaphone to rouse a deaf world. I'll never forget that the highest attended service, more than Christmas, more than Easter, that I ever experienced at my church in Florida was this Sunday, 2001. Everybody went to church after 9/11. We had questions that we needed answers to, and we realized God's the only one who has the answers. We were asking these kind of questions. And Solomon says, take this to heart. Live with the end in mind. Live with eternity in mind. Don't live a day without thinking about where this is all leading, that this life is. I say it every week for one reason, because it's so easy to make this life about so many other things. There'll be all kinds of distractions that want to make your life about what's happening in the moment and what you're going to get, what you're going to acquire, what you're going to do, what you're going to achieve, where you're going to go to school, what kind of job you're going to get. But this life is about nothing more than a loving relationship that you will enjoy for all eternity. Don't ever forget it. I'll tell you every single week if I have to. Secondly, Solomon's saying, let sorrow shape you, not harden you. It's very easy to get very embittered towards this world, to decide that it hurts so bad to lose someone you love, I'll never love anymore. And he says, I know there's a temptation to escape and to numb the pain. Don't sit. Think. One of the comedians I like to listen to, he has this whole long bit, I think he calls it mindfulness, about how mindfulness is something that people actually like have to pay to go experience. We used to experience it all day long, right? You'd wait in line, you'd sit on a bus, you'd sit on an airplane, and what did you do? You thought. You don't have to think anymore. There's endless entertainment. I mean, most people never contemplate a single thing. They don't have to think about anything. Something happens at death where you have the opportunities to sit and think. And he says, you take advantage of it and ask better questions. Instead of asking, what can I experience? What can I do? What can I do to numb the pain? Ask, how am I living? What am I doing with my life? Where is my life leading? What will people say of me? Who will show up at my funeral? What am I doing now that's going to matter 1,000 years from now? Am I really living this life about nothing more than a loving relationship with one I'll spend all eternity with, or am I living it about something else? And then lastly, of course, this kind of all comes around. Who is Jesus to you? I went back and re-listened to this past week. And if you've never listened to him, I encourage everybody in this room to go back and listen. The very first two messages, if you go all the way back to the very earliest two messages that are on the website, listen to them. One is the Easter message from 2012, and the next message is the first message I preached after my wife passed. And it's the same message. Because on the Easter message, it was on the book of Hebrews, where it talks about a lot of people who had a lot of bad stuff happen and died and never got to experience what they were hoping for. And it says, their hope is in a better resurrection. And I took a lot of grief over that message. It wasn't everybody's favorite Easter message, let me just put it that way. But it was the message that got me through what was about to happen in my life. I didn't think my story would end there. That wasn't my hope. Now I realize my hope is for a better resurrection of a life that has no more end. And so he says, our hope is in a better resurrection. And as you face death and tragedy and your own mortality, may your hope not be in what you do and accomplish, experience in this life or how long you get to live this life, but may your hope be in a better resurrection, to wake up on the other side of this life, stepping into eternity, into the Father's arms. Would you join us as we close our time in prayer? Father, I thank you for your grace over us. That as we live each life, each day of this life, jumping into distraction after distraction, scrolling each second of every day away such that we don't ever have to think or contemplate life in eternity. We thank you for moments like this, and dare I say, even say weeks like this, where we can reflect and think about this life. That there is no way to make any sense of anything in this life if this life is all there is. It must point to an eternity that must be better. If you are a good God, then there's got to be something better than this. So, Father, that is the foundation and the bedrock of a faith I have in you, of a faith in a better resurrection, of a life as it was always meant to be, in perfect community with you, and the kind of love we long to see here. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.